So before I finish what I have to share, I'll say two things. If you want to stand and stretch, you can. And this is a long teaching session. This is the longest one we'll have, I think. And the second thing is I want to say that I'm grateful, too, that many years I've had fellowship with Joseph and others. Many of you don't know CC and brothers from others from Washington, Babu and Alex, who I miss, you know, and it's gone to be with the Lord. You know, we've had maybe 50 retreats together, men's retreats, family retreats, at least, lots of things. You know, whatever we did, and by way of details, planning, some things go better than others, some retreats smoother than others. But when I come to all this and I say, well, now what's come out of that? You know, and as we've recently met, some of us are meeting once a month on Sunday nights to share our needs and to pray for one another. What's come of all that is that we love one another. We do. I can say that. I love Brother Joseph. I love Alex and Babu and Bruce. And I'm very, very thankful for that. And so what has God accomplished? That's what God's accomplished. That is a good thing. You know, it's not just us, you know. There's a lot of people involved in this, the sisters and the many other people who touch on that. Because if you look at the church and you see people do many things, but in the end there's not love. There's division and there's conflict. What have we really accomplished, right? So it's a wonderful thing. That's not to say we're perfected in that love, but we're moving in that direction, and there's grace being made known. So that's just a wonderful thing, and I just take great comfort in that. So I'm going to try and finish what I was sharing about Ruth last night, and many of you were not here. I'll give a quick recap. I went through the book of Ruth. We actually read the whole book of Ruth. And if you have time today and you want to reflect on some of the things that are being said, one thing you could consider is just sit and read the book of Ruth. It takes about 15 minutes or so to go through it. It doesn't take that long, but it's good. Joseph shared this with us. When you read something, read it slowly. Just think about it a little bit. God's word will not return void, even if you don't feel like you get something immediate and clear out of it. But being exposed to it like that, God is committed to using it to transform in your life. But I wanted to look at the book of Ruth and ask the question, what do I learn about loving God and loving neighbor from the book of Ruth? That's how we were approaching it. And we looked at the first two chapters last night, and I will go through the next two chapters and finish with what I have to say here today. And a number of things really struck me in that early part of Ruth, the first two chapters. And I've never really thought of Ruth and Naomi as a contrast, but they really are. So they're both in a difficult situation. Naomi has left her country, gone to Moab. Her husband dies, her sons marry Moabite wives, and then they die. So there's these three women, mother-in-law and her two daughter-in-laws, living together in what is a foreign land for Naomi without any men in their lives. And it's a very difficult situation for them. And then the famine in Israel ends, which is what caused Naomi and her husband to leave in the first place. So Naomi says, I'm going to go back. And she tells her daughter-in-law, stay here with your family. Don't come with me. I can't give you husbands in Israel. But as you watch Naomi now, in that second chapter in particular, she arrives back in Bethlehem. People see her. She says, don't even call me Naomi, which means pleasant. She says, call me Mara, which means bitter, because God has dealt bitterly with me. But really but when you look at how she speaks and her posture towards God, the issue is that she's bitter towards God. And It's been very, very striking to me. It's been kind of dwelling on that, meditating on it. I've gone through it a number of times. If I ask myself, what helps me understand and receive the love of God, and what inhibits that, that if I'm bitter in my life because of what something God has brought into my life, then it suppresses my perception of the love of God. I miss it. It's there. He does love me. He expresses it, but I don't see it and I don't receive it. And it also quenches the work of the Spirit in my life so that I do not return that love to God. And so last night I concluded with this thought that we should pray about this, whether we are bitter towards anyone or anything, particularly anything towards God. Has he dealt me something in my life and I'm angry about it? You shouldn't have done that. God, that was not right. That was not fair. God is always just. God is always loving. God is always right, and he's always doing things for our good, although some of them are exceedingly difficult. So I don't. And then we contrast that with Ruth, who, as Naomi is leaving, you know, Orpha takes Naomi's exhortation, goes back to her own people, but Ruth says, no, I'm going to follow you. And then there's those wonderful verses, famous verses, your God will be my God, your people will be my people. When we dwelt a little bit on how that happens and why that happens and why she said that and what that means, and I won't go back over that in a lot of detail now, but it is a remarkable statement. This is a woman who's grown up as a Moabite, and she just has a mother-in-law who's a Jewish woman, and she's going to follow that mother-in-law back to Israel. And what happens there is a picture of salvation. That's what we're going to look at now. Of course, you know the rest of the story in chapter 2, that she gets there, and Ruth says, well, I'll go out and glean. She understood what some of the customs were there. And I mentioned that when she says she's going to go out and glean, she says this. She says, let me go out and glean and see in whose eyes I might find favor. She says that. And rather than going out and saying, well, I'm going to go out and glean because this is really the only way we can get food. I'll go out and glean and let me see how much I can gather and whether it'll be enough to sustain us. So her focus in going out, Ruth somehow knew, just like she knew, there's something about Naomi's God. There's something about Naomi's people that's above and beyond what I have. I want that. So likewise, now she knows that in the process of gleaning, in order to receive some food for her and Naomi, some sustenance for her and Naomi, there's something more in that. God has something more in that for her than just feeding her body. And it has to do with her finding someone who favors her. And then she finds someone who favors her. That's Boaz. Boaz is the kinsman redeemer. He is a picture of Christ in this story. And he extends favor to her. I won't go through the details of what those are. You can read it there in chapter 2. And in the end of chapter 2, we kind of have a little conclusion that throughout the barley season, and there's another season of a different grain, she's going out day after day, and she's gathering, but she's doing it with Boaz's women in Boaz's field because he has pronounced a blessing on her, and it's granting her protection in that environment and provision in that environment. And she settles into a routine that makes provision for her and for Naomi. The last thing I commented on is that we see Ruth's love for Naomi, because she is making provision for Naomi. And so Naomi offers Ruth, not consciously, but offers Ruth her God and her people. Naomi now is offering, Ruth is now offering Naomi food. So now something, that the story changes a little bit, because Naomi, in my mind, perks up. And Naomi, by the end of the story, overcomes her bitterness. And there's a lot of threads you can follow through a story, but this is becoming striking to me. I've already said it. I'll say it again. Where there's bitterness, you cannot appreciate the love of God. And you quench the work of the Spirit that stirs love in your heart for God. Joseph shared that story with it. The love of God has been poured in our heart, out into our hearts through the Spirit which he has given to us. Romans 5:5. It's a beautiful, wonderful verse. That's exactly right. But when you're bitter, you quench the pouring out of the Spirit into your life. And when you quench that, then you suppress the love in your heart for God and then for others. So Naomi has a bit of a transformation. It starts here in verse 3 of the next chapter, for the first verse of chapter 3. And Naomi says to Ruth, my daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it may be well with you? And this is really, I think, the most clear expression of care that Naomi shows for Ruth in the text up to now. And she sees what Ruth is doing. She says, well, he's going out day after day, and it's the hot sun, and she works hard, and she brings home. And yes, she's found Boaz, and he's watching out for her. And that's a great blessing. But she knows that Boaz is a kinsman redeemer. That's a particular relationship between people. It has to do with family structure. And she knows that she, Naomi, has lost her husband and that therefore she will not, and her sons. And so she is not going to have, and he is not going to have, a lineage in Israel. And God has made a provision for that. The provision for that is that the kinsman redeemer takes the woman who's lost her husband and marries her and raises up a seed for her. That's the broad stroke there. And she knows that, and she knows it's him. And she says, well, and this is kind of a bit of a twist on things, but she says, no, well, you know, here's Ruth working day after day in Boaz's field, and isn't it possible that Boaz will take Ruth and raise up a heritage for us? And then, by the way, Boaz is a wealthy man, and he'll take care of us, and Ruth doesn't have to work in the fields anymore. That's all tied up in this little word, rest, right? Should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you? What is well for her? Well for her is that she should have a family, and she should have children, and that she should have a home in which she's cared for. That's well. That's well. And this is really what unfolds in the story. And so for the first time, Naomi is beginning to relinquish her bitterness. Here she doesn't complain. She could. I mean, if she was still bitter, she would say this. She would say, you know, Ruth, I know you're out there in the field day by day, and I got to tell you, this is as good as it gets. If you just keep working, you'll keep earning an income, and we'll make it. And I don't know what'll happen after harvest, but you know, we'll find a way. But this is what it is: you work, you earn something, and we get out of life what we put into it. And that's because, and then the bitterness rises up. That's because God took your husband, and God took my husband, and God took my son-in-law, and you know, God's a demanding guy, and it's not as the way it should be, you know. And we, again, as I had said yesterday, she sees God as a harsh master rather than a loving father. And that's because the love is not in her heart. But she doesn't do that here. She's beginning to see, you know what? I'm still not sure I'm happy with what God did. I'm still maybe somewhat angry with that. But God has made provision for someone like me who's lost my husband. And I think I'm going to take that. I want to take advantage of that. And Ruth, here's what you have to do. And then she tells Ruth what she has to do, which, and when you read the story for the first time, it's kind of strange. I've never, you know, what is it? If I was asleep and you know, someone uncovered my feet and then slept near my feet, and I woke up, and so, you know, this is really strange stuff. But anyway, it was the custom of the day. So one of the things that we learn from this is, there's a couple of things. Let me just read my notes on this, because I think it expresses it with clarity. It says, love moves us to seek rest for those we love. That's what I just said. Naomi now is seeking rest for Ruth. The giver, Naomi, is motivated to meet the one they are helping in a way that allows the help to be received. So Ruth has something she can do to receive benefit from Boaz, the kinsman redeemer. He would have to choose to love her. Right, he would have to choose to make a sacrifice for her, but she can receive it, but she needs to know how. There are things to be stepped out. In other words, when God is offering us a blessing, when God is, because he loves us directly or through another person, there remains the option of receiving it or not receiving it. Do you realize that? I mean, you say, oh, well, that's obvious. But how many times do we miss it? How many times do we not? And God says, here's the gift. Here's what you have to do to receive it. You go over here, do this, say that, do that. Give this up. Change. Brother Joseph reminded us, he says, sometimes when God offers us something, but he also says to receive this, there's a work of the cross in your life. There's going to be some sacrifice. In other words, you sacrifice, then you receive a blessing I have for you that's above and beyond what you can receive. If you fail to make the sacrifice, you can't receive it. So anyway, this is a remarkable thing about Ruth. Ruth needs these specific details to bridge a cultural gap. And she says, yeah, I will do what you have to say. And often good gifts are rejected because of an unwillingness to do what is required to receive the gift. And I think that's something that I'm really dwelling on. And then if we look at Boaz as a type of Jesus here, we can apply it in our own lives. Love for Jesus can be shown by making an appeal to him. In other words, Ruth appeals to Boaz, and there's a picture there of us appealing to Jesus. And if you look at what the text says and what Naomi says to Ruth, she says, you know, don't go right away. Go after he's eaten and he's lying down, he's resting, and his heart is, what does it say, merry. His heart is merry. And then you approach him. There's a right time and a right way to do this. But when we approach Jesus, we have to ask ourselves how we view him. And do we view Jesus as someone who has a merry heart when he looks upon us? In other words, I approach Jesus, and I'm looking for a blessing from him. I need something from him. Or I feel like he's speaking to me, and he's saying, come to me, I have something for you. And when I look at him, do I say, well, I'll go, because I did all these things, demonstrated that I really care for him, and if I go and I remind him about those things, and I look just right, he'll look at me in a positive way, and he'll have a glad heart. He'll be merry, and then he'll give it to me. See, that's not the way Jesus is. I mean, not that he disregards the things we do, but his heart is always merry. And when he looks upon us, he's always glad. Do you think about him that way? Do I think about him that way? And I was praying recently about this. I was really wrestling with the Lord with something. And praying, I really wanted an added measure of grace for something. And the Lord said, I was feeling, Lord, I want to take a step forward and mature. Yeah, the Lord said, you know, I love you. I love you. And after I move on and mature, whatever it is that I was kind of wrestling with, is if I break through and move on and I mature, the Lord's not going to love me more. He loves me as much as he can love me. Never will his love for me increase, because his love for me is infinite. It's at full capacity, more than I can ever know. And so it is when I approach him, if I approach him with this idea that his heart is merry because of me, because he's glad because he has me. Why was I important to him? I don't know. I don't know why he chose me. I really don't, can't meditate much on that. But he did. And I am his. And he is merry over me. And when I approach him, his heart is glad to see me. And of course, he may have conditions so that I can receive what we said that already. But I must start by having the right attitude towards God. And then, of course, and then I think it's the main thing I want to communicate here. And then, of course, Boaz acts. He blesses Ruth for this further act of sacrifice on her part, because she's sacrificing the possibility of marrying a younger man to marry him, who's an older man, so that she can receive the blessing of carrying on Naomi's family line and Elimelech's family line, which, as a non-Jew, I mean, it's not something she really needed to take on. But he sees that, he recognizes that. And then Boaz goes on, and it's kind of a long story about the redemption, which I won't dwell on too much. But I want to go to the end of the story, and we'll finish with this. After the marriage and after the birth of Ruth's first child, Obed. And there are two blessings that are pronounced, two categories of blessing. Either by the people of the town. And one blessing is a blessing upon the family, Boaz and Ruth, and their heritage. But the other one is a blessing on Naomi. So let's just look at those two. We'll finish with that. And the one that is pronounced on Boaz and Ruth, it says, "May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house," that's like Rachel and Leah, "who together built up the house of Israel, may you act worthily in Ephrathah and be known in Bethlehem, and may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. You know what happened there, right? Because Tamar was Judah's daughter-in-law, and he was adulterous with her. And out of that adulterous relationship comes Perez, and Perez is in the lineage of Christ. I mean, can I say something about the heritage of Jesus in the natural? It's really messy. It is a big problem. Do you have problems in your lineage? Many of us don't know, but we've spent a lot of time recently talking about family curses that are passed on. We all have them. I want to tell you that. Love covers a multitude of sins. Here the women say, "Boaz, you're going to marry a foreigner. You're not supposed to marry a foreigner. But in order to fulfill the law, in this case, you have to marry a foreigner. You're going to do that. And we're pronouncing a blessing on you." And it's kind of like the blessing of Perez, you know. I mean, Judah did what he wasn't supposed to do, but God worked it for the good. And Boaz is going to marry a foreigner, but God's going to work it for the good. And you're going to raise up fruit. And what fruit did they raise up? He became the grandfather of David. Okay, that's the blessing there. I want to tell you that God can redeem your history. I want you to believe that. I want to believe that. You know, Claudia and I have spent many years, we've thought about these over 40 years now, about heritage and so on. And as we've prayed, we've discovered things about the family that we say, oh my. Wow. Oh my. Keep discovering, you know. Oh my. And God has to redeem that. I want that to stop in my generation and not get passed on to my children. And so we wrestle with this. We're praying about this. And love covers a multitude of sin. And then finally, there's the blessing here upon Naomi, which is even a richer thing in my way of thinking. Verse 17 of chapter 4. "And the woman of the neighborhood gave him a name." Sorry, that's not the passage of verse 15. 14 and the woman's, thank you. "The woman said to Naomi, 'Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a redeemer. and may his name be renowned in Israel, that's Boaz. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. You know, for those of us who are old, God wants to nourish us in our old age. The later years should be greater than the former years. You know, Joseph spoke to the young people. I speak to the old people. God blesses all of us. And then notice this, for your daughter-in-law, who loves you, is more to you than seven sons and has given birth. This is the one place, I said this last night, where's the one place in Ruth where the word love is used? This is the only verse. It's full of the love of God and of the love of Boaz for those he's redeeming. But here it is. And it's the love that Naomi persisted in and her obedience to God that has brought a restoration into the life of Naomi, who I think here has finally relinquished her bitterness and has received the kind of inheritance and blessing God wanted for her all along. You know. But it was a long road. But God takes us where we need to be because he really wants what's best for us. Okay, we're going to stop there. I'm sorry, we're just a minute or two late. Let's just pray. Lord, I pray we can take things away from this that are helpful. Faith will grow. And that, Lord, we will see your love with clarity, be free from all bitterness, and out of the abundance of the work of the Spirit in our lives, show love to others. In your name we pray. Amen. So I want to share one other verse from Ruth that is relevant to something I observed here at the retreat and was a blessing to me. It's at the end of chapter 3. It's the one verse where Naomi is saying to Ruth, this is after the whole business where Ruth went and to the threshing floor and uncovered Boaz's feet, and then he says, you know, I am your kinsman redeemer. Somebody is closer than me, but I'm going to look into this. I'm going to take care of you and Naomi. And so Ruth comes back, reports this to Naomi, and Naomi says, this is the last verse of the chapter, she replied, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today. So, you know, Jesus is, Boaz is a type of Jesus. And this thought, you know, that Jesus does not rest is very striking to me. And it reminds me of the verse in Psalms where it says, God neither slumbers nor sleeps. And then the flip side is me. I need to rest. I'm not God. And so this is very, very precious because if I recognize my need for rest, this ties in a little bit to what Sarah was saying. When I'm resting, I'm waiting. She says, wait, my daughter. I'm waiting and I'm resting, but it's not without expectation. I'm resting and I'm waiting because I need to receive things from the Lord. But while I'm resting and waiting and hoping to receive things from the Lord, I'm wondering, are the things that I want, you know, the people I want to see change and saved and the work I need to do. And, you know, Brian's roof doesn't leak because he's taken care of it for 30 years. I mean, roofs don't last forever. All of us who have had our houses for 30 years have done stuff on our roofs and a lot of other things. I mean, that's just one. So here I am, I'm waiting, I want to receive things from the Lord, but I'm also knowing things need to be done. And I have all these exhortations that are in the back of my mind that, you know, I shouldn't be sluggish in a life. The time is short, and I should be about the Lord's business. So how am I about the Lord's business, and I'm resting and waiting? And there's a kind of a tension that develops there for me. And this is particularly true for me when I look at
helping family, and ministering in the church. And so if you feel like that I don't have any tension in my life, then take a concern for the church, look around, and you'll see a couple of needs that are unmet, and then you can feel the tension in the unmet needs. And then there's this exhortation, there's a time to rest, there's a time to wait upon the Lord. The comfort I have in all this is that while I rest, God does not. That's a great comfort to me, because God is always at work. And the things that I see that need to be done, that God is willing to show me so that I can partner with him, at least in terms of having a concern and praying sometimes in terms of working, the things I see, God sees. God saw before me. He showed them to me. And he knows the time and the place of having the needs met. He's working towards that. It's just like Shanna shared with us. Some people, they start in a difficult place. I think if a few of us remember Roger Daly, he's always been my example in this area of somebody who, you know, if he was going to be in a race in a stadium, and maybe he's a really good runner, but when the gun went off, he was outside the stadium. He wasn't even in the locker room putting on his sneakers. And yet he ran, and he reached the goal. He became a believer, and he died in peace, you know. But he had a long way to go. And so I just want to say that we need to know what it is. I need to know what it is to wait upon the Lord and rest, because if I don't, I won't receive from the Lord what he wants to give me when I rest. He's determined. There are things Bill gets when he rests and waits before me, just the way Ruth did. And if you look at the story, here she is, chapter 3. She's not doing too bad. I think I had said this. She's gathering the sheaves. They have the grain. Now Boaz has given them more grain. And she and Naomi have been eating, and they have their home, and they're okay. And if life was like that the rest of her life, you'd have to say, well, okay, you know, you're doing okay. But there was so much more for her. What there was a husband and a child and blessings that were pronounced. We talked about that. I won't go back to that. And all that came not because she went out into the field to work, but because she did what Naomi said. She said she rested and she waited that day after she did do what she was told to do. And everything else happened because she waited, and Boaz didn't rest. He got up and he did what he needed to do. And our heavenly Boaz is at work. F.B. Meyer says, God is saving the world. You know, that has been a great comfort to me. God is saving the world. He is saving the world. That is to say, all the things that we see, oh, what about this, what about that? God says, you know, in the end, I will do what I need to do, and there will be a new heaven and a new earth. And you will look back on it and you will say, wow, God did all things well. His way is perfect. So.